So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game!
Politics.com. Make sure you go there, check out all the latest, and while you're there, click on a few sponsors. They help pay for this show. And with that in mind, here's the newest stranger to the MVM group, and I say the newest stranger, you'll realize why in a minute. Mr. Ed Martin, how are you, sir?
Hey, good. Marco Polo Martin, huh?
I'm telling you, dude, you're all over the map the last few weeks.
Yeah, I always seem to be somewhere else, you know, whether I'm taking care of business, you know, making money, paying taxes, things like that, or you know, as some of, actually I heard it in the business world once, you know, you got to take care of mama too, because if mama ain't happy, nobody's happy.
Well, I agree with you there. I was
celebrating my wife's birthday last night, so got to pay it forward.
Well, I was going to say, you know, we need to wish Leia, Ed Martin's beautiful wife, Leia, she's a sweetheart, a happy birthday from yesterday. That's why he wasn't here. And, you need to talk to Barack Obama. I mean, he built that business for you, but I think he might be overworking you in the process. So, you know, talk to Barack, see if you can get some time off. You know, of course, the way he's running the government right now, you're probably going to get that anyway. So it's just one of those things. Man, we got a lot going on, and I tell you, I really want to get into some national stuff really, really bad tonight, because you've been absent the last, two or three shows, and but I want to start with this, and I tell you why. We've got a story coming from Wave 3. It's about this ban the box ordinance that Metro Louisville government is working on. This proposed ordinance is called Ban the Box for a reason. They say that it's going to help end the so-called discriminatory hiring practice. What that basically means is that they want to ban a box on any Metro government application or its vendors' applications asking if they've ever been convicted of a felony. Now, the reason this is a story for me, folks, is I've actually been following this crap for many years. thanks to an idiot who is now in charge of your money, working in a Louisville accounting office by the name of John Flood. Ed, you're familiar with this. You know, John Flood pled guilty to a felony charge in 2008 to falsifying an application. And what did he falsify? John Flood is a convicted felon for theft, forgery and theft, folks. He is a convicted felon for forgery and theft from 1997. When he filled out his application to work for Metro Government, he answered no on his application when he was there, and he also signed a written oath that declared that he possessed the qualifications prescribed by law to be a code enforcement officer. Now, this was after this conviction of a convicted felony and everything else. So, because he was a convicted felon, he was not qualified. He knew this, and he signed the statement anyway. So he lied on his application, swore under penalty of perjury rules on a written oath that he possessed qualifications that he didn't have. What was really interesting is that they gave him a job at IPL with a badge and some powers. Well, once he got caught lying, Sergeant Pete McCarthy, over at the LMPD Public Integrity Unit, was investigating charges against him for lying about this and committing perjury, and lo and behold, John Flood was indicted. John Flood then made a plea deal with Special Prosecutor Chip McKay out of Nelson County, and this is a guy I would never trust, folks. He swore he would never take a plea deal on this, and he did anyway. Politics ruled in this case, but basically he made a plea deal, and John Flood was able to plea out in 2009. The stipulation was that he would resign as an IPL inspector at the end of the year, the end of the year 2008, actually, that at the end of December he would resign as an IPL inspector, get his retirement, and quit government work, and they in turn would not prosecute him to the fullest extent of the law, put his ass in jail. So now we've got a two-time criminal, a convicted felon, and lo and behold, the plea deal was made and everything else. Last year, Metro Government rehired John Flood with IPL, you know, and gave him, you know, full salary, full everything, gave him everything with IPL. And then he reapplied for a new job in the Louisville accounting office, and now he works in accounts. So the reason this became a story is because the Metro Government is arguing about this ban to box. Six Democrats co-sponsored this ordinance to ban the box asking about your criminal record on a hiring application. But they've already proven that that really doesn't matter because they bypassed their own rules, changed the application to accommodate a convicted fellow by the name of John Flood and put him in an office that deals with your money. Ed, what is this going on? What's going on? How do they think they could possibly play this silly-ass game, and everybody forgot about John Flood?
Well, you know, things like this are always confusing to me when you have the private sector. And we're going to always ask that in the private sector because, you know, you don't want to bring somebody into your accounting department that has embezzled or stolen. You don't want to bring somebody into, you know, HR who maybe is a rapist or something. You know, and the thing is you know, right now we're talking about, you know, white-collar crime type of deals with Flood, but the fact is, felonies are violent. And, my God, you know, if somebody could be, I'm thinking, okay, you know, I know it gets under your skin with Manon Flood and everything, but as an employer, you know, one of those things we're always conscious of is you got to provide a safe workplace. So I'm telling you, somebody... I would definitely, and I will not give it up, you know, it's, you know, the way to find out with background checks or something. But the fact of the matter is, if you've got a felony, they're not all white-collar crimes. Matter of fact, a lot of them are violent.
Right.
And as a person, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, let's remove Flood from the equation. Let's say we've got somebody who, you know, is familiar with assaulting and battering someone or anything for that matter, a pedophile, a rapist, anything.
Well, see, I'm glad you went down that road.
Just beating the crap out of people on a regular basis kind of guy. And
well, see, I'm glad you went down that road.
Well, it's to the point, if you can't check that and they can't do that, you know, they can't look for your felony, then at some point you're just could be bringing people in that you, under the old ways, so fairly easily, you know, they could possibly pose as a
right.
worker, or that they could just, you know, be incompetent and you might need to keep your eye on them. But, you know, they do this, it's like, well, great.
Well, see, that's the thing.
They could pay for anybody to come in. And then
well,
what? Then I look at the possibility of lawsuits. It's like, well
that's exactly it. Kevin Cramer.
Put a sexual offender in, sexually harass somebody, you know, Frankfurt.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's look at Councilman Kevin Cramer,
Ed. It could end up costing the city or the state or whatever government entity. It could end up costing them millions of dollars when the plaintiff's attorney looks at him and goes, well, did you do a background check? Well, you know, did you ascertain any way that they were a sexual predator?
Well, that's
no.
the beauty of it, though, Ed, because they did do a background check on John Flood the second time he was hired last year. And the background check showed a criminal theft conviction, a forgery theft conviction, you know, and everything else. And so his criminal background check showed this, and yet they allowed him to go and work in the accounting department for Louisville Metro Government. It's crazy. And Kevin Cramer, councilman, or district
well,
councilman.
Well, hey, you know, at least he was there. Wasn't it Judy Green's grandson, I think, that was sitting in jail?
Well, that's true. That's true. At least he showed up.
He's getting paid and he wasn't
that was
even there.
Barbara
I mean,
Shankland.
Come on. Hey, this is,
yeah, that was actually
this
Barbara
could be
Shankland.
Raising the bar for Louisville Metro.
Right, that was Barbara Shankland, not Judy Green. But, you know, it's interesting because District 11 councilperson Kevin Cramer, Republican Kevin Cramer, you know, he went on record and was quoted as saying that, you know, yeah, you know, sometimes this question can seem to be unfair. But the way they've written this ordinance now is that they did try to make a change, and what they're going to do is allow a criminal background check, but only after an offer of employment. So what this means is you're going to offer somebody a job so they're hired, and then you're going to do a criminal background check. You don't even know what you're getting until after you hire them, is what Cramer said, and he's absolutely right. So now you've hired somebody. Then all of a sudden you get a background check and you don't like this guy. Maybe they are a pedophile and they're going to be working in a part of Metro government that deals with kids, you know, maybe Parks Department or something. You know, and so now this guy's a convicted pedophile. It creates a problem. So, you know, Cramer is right about that, you know, but then for the person who gets hired and then their background check comes back screwed up, do you have liability now for telling them we're sorry, we're not going to give you the job because of your background check? Shouldn't that have been done first? I mean, in the private sector. So this thing is completely screwed up from the word go. It's only co-sponsored by six Democrats because of two reasons. One, the John Flood situation is not going away. We've still got heat on John Flood. And two, these damn sick old Democrats on the council want to bring in some more of their convicted felon friends, whether that's from state level, city level, whatever. So it's very disturbing. You know, and you know, it's interesting you mentioned, you know, if you've got a criminal background or stuff, and we'll get into a little bit of the Naval Shipyard in a minute, but, you know, Aaron Alexis, the guy who did the shooting at the Washington Naval Shipyard, you know, this guy had all kinds of red flags and warning flags. He should have never been on that base, you know, and they ignored that then. So that just goes to show you about government. Another story we really want to touch base on real quick is U.S. Senator Rand Paul was in Louisville yesterday, folks. Imagine that, a senator coming back home and doing his job and, you know, talking to the people. But he didn't hide out at the all-white colleges or anything else. No, Rand Paul actually went down to the West End and talked to a black audience yesterday, and he was talking about restoring voting and gun ownership rights of felons who have completed their sentences. And quite frankly, I think that that's a great thing to discuss, especially in the black community, because the black community, for whatever reason, they feel they are or they really are, depending on which you want to are being persecuted by a criminal might be 30 years old, you know. But I thought it was great that Rand Paul Louisville and sat down and had to talk about you.
Hello.
Okay. Ed?
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure if it's you or me going. Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
About Rand Paul.
Say again. You're breaking. I think it's you that's breaking up. But Hello.
Probably not a surprise. Okay. Anyway, I'm talking about Saran Paul coming. What are you doing now?
Hello.
I'm not sure how. Why? Here. You're having them hearing me.
I think that's you. Hello.
All right. We'll take a quick break, folks. Right back. This is Great Show Radio Network. Stay tuned. So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Out now. I, folks, I'm really at a loss as to tell you guys what's been going on with the sound the last couple of days. Everything, all the equipment is working perfectly. All the levels are working perfectly. We've switched microphones, headsets, you name it. We've done it. And it's just interesting to me what's really going on here. So I apologize for any sound disruptions or anything else. But, you know, we still have a show to do, right, Ed?
Yes, sir, we do.
All right. Well, you know, as we were going into break before we had this situation, we were talking about, I was getting ready to get into Rand Paul going into the West End, notoriously, you know, it's the largest black population we have in Louisville, and talking about pushing, he's trying to push to restore the voting and gun ownership rights of felons, convicted felons who've completed their sentences. You know, I'm personally 100% agreement with that. That's something we've talked about on air many times. You know, isn't it interesting that Rand Paul once again is leading the way, and more, and even more than that, here he is, a Republican, a Tea Party Republican, if you will, going into the Black West End to talk about voting and gun ownership rights for felons. That's what the black leadership is saying they wanted, and it took a Republican to go in there and do it because the Democrats won't even go there. Isn't that very telling?
Yeah, oh, extremely, especially after the Democrats want to do, I guess, restorative employment is what we'll call it, you know, with the not putting the box on there.
Right,
but,
right.
Let's face it. Everybody knows Rand Paul has strong libertarian leanings, you know, and his father even more so. And one of the big gripes of the libertarians, and, you know, when fashionable, the Democrats get on board, is the war on drugs. And we think of the percentage of people that get felony convictions, the percentage of people that do time for, you know, I think victimless crime, as some people like to say, is probably not the proper nomenclature, but for nonviolent crimes, you know, it's like we say, three strikes, you're out, you call it a dime bag or whatever, ruin your life. I think he's very, you know, he's in tune with that. Now, when it comes to violent crimes, I don't know if doing your time is quite enough, especially if you've taken time away from, you know, you robbed somebody else of their you know, life and happiness. But yeah, I think it's in line with the libertarian mindset. But the thing, I'm with you, the thing that gets me is that the city's run by Democrats. The state's run by Democrats.
Right.
You know, our at least in Louisville, our U.S. rep is a Democrat. And who goes to the West End to talk about restorative rights? Probably one of the, you know, at least to hear the angry liberal left say, you know, one of the most polarizing figures going is the one standing up saying, you know what, let's get on with this.
All right, I'm totally agreeing with you.
I think it shows Rand is, you know, whether you love him or hate him, he's a real deal, you know, and he's not playing race cards. He's not doing public polling or anything to see what his positions are. This is something that is in line with his philosophy, and he's going to go with it. And he's going to preach it in front of, and he's going to discuss it and debate it in front of whoever wants to go a few rounds with him. And that whether you like or hate his policies, you've got to admire that about him.
Well, and I think you're totally right. I find it great because this isn't the first time that Rand Paul has led the way, reaching across the aisle, if you will. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how this develops. Now, I will tell you this. I spoke to some insiders earlier today, and from what I understand, there is already talk here in Kentucky by some Republicans in the Senate. I won't give their names out tonight until it's verified, but they're already talking about trying to push this in Kentucky finally through the Senate. And if that happens, that's going to be a great thing. So we'll see what happens. In the meantime, we do have other stories going around before we get into the meat. Of course, we've got Obamacare. You know, all the congressmen are being exempt from that. That's coming up again. We'll get into some details on that next week. In Chicago, or Illinois, I should say, former White House Chief of Staff Bill Daley has decided not to run in the Illinois governor's race, even though he announced he was a few months ago. He was quoted as saying that he had hoped he would be able to run for office You know, but he's come to the conclusion that this isn't the best thing for me, probably because the Chicago Mafia told him to stay the hell out. I don't think there's much doubt about that. You know, and then we've got, of course, on a national level.
I think this Chicago connection would probably enjoy having him in. But
no,
he's not his daddy.
He's not.
I think this is the as a popular site on the internet is called Illinois Broke. You know, sometimes I think these politicians grow a few more brain cells and look at it. And he's probably thinking, Illinois governor. Yeah, that's like the captain of the Titanic said, "Here, take the wheel. I'm out of here." You know, no.
Well, I find it interesting because, you know, he is not his daddy. His daddy was loved. But I find it interesting because you're right, they are broke. But you take somebody to come in there to clean it up that's going to hold people accountable. I think the Chicago Mafia likes things just the way it is. They don't care if the state is broke as long as they're getting their cut of the pie. And I think ultimately that's what's happening here. That's my opinion anyway. We'll see how it works out.
I don't know. You know, hey, I got a little Italian blood in me, and I'll tell you, you know, one thing about the mob, whether it's Russian or any other mob, is they're pretty smart, and what's good for business is good for the mob. I think the organized crime would love nothing more than to see the state flush with cash, doing big road contracts, negotiating big employee union contracts, you know, public sector contracts. Oh, when there's no money, there's nothing to stop. There's plain sorry businesses, you know, legitimate or otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether they're taking a cut from the union dues or something, if the union can't negotiate for more money,
right,
that hits them in the back pocket. No, absolutely. Unions, I mean, the mob loves a prosperous economy.
Well, I would disagree, but it's okay with me. We'll disagree on that. The mob loves first things first. The mob loves getting their cut of the pie. They don't care where it comes from. They don't care if times are up or times are down. They're going to get paid one way or the other. We do have a separate thing going on a national level. The House is expected to consider a bill that's going to cut food stamps by about $4 billion a year, and it's going to allow states some broader requirements that's going to allow them to basically hold people accountable, you know, when it comes to work and things like that. So that's going to be interesting to see where that one goes. You know, of course, we're going to have some problems with that. One of the things that's interesting here, it's also going to tighten the eligibility standards because it's going to allow states to require drug testing for any recipients. And I think that is very crucial to drug tests if you're going to accept our tax dollars. It's going to bar convicted murderers, rapists, and pedophiles from receiving any food stamps. So it's going to be interesting looking at that going forward. But, you know, we've got to really get into the story of the day and what's really going on. We started with this yesterday. Aaron Alexis, he was the gunman that killed 13 people in Washington at the Washington Naval Shipyard. He was a Navy veteran from New York, but he had also been previously arrested in two other shooting incidents. He was discharged from the Navy 2 years ago, and, you know, he was accused of spraying bullets from the fourth floor down in the cafeteria area, you know, that's where the shooting started yesterday. But he has a history of shooting, he has a history of mental problems, he has a history of anger control problems. If you want proof of that, in 2010, shortly before he was discharged, he had fired shots up into an apartment above his because he said the neighbor was too loud. In 2004, he was arrested in Seattle. He shot out the tires of a construction worker's car, and he said it was an anger-fueled blackout. He also told Seattle police that he had witnessed the September 11, 2001 terror attacks and all these other things. You know, and then his dad goes on and says that, you know, his son Aaron had participated in rescue efforts during 9/11. This guy has some serious mental issues going back almost 10 years that can be tracked. And yet the very first thing we're told is that he had an AR-15 and you know, this was a planned attack. Ed, the anti-gun lobby has no bounds anymore. For one thing, we now know that there was no AR-15 involved in this shooting in any way, shape, or form, even though Dianne Feinstein and the other idiots jumped on board of it. You know, why was this guy allowed to be on this Navy installation with a mental history like this? Any ideas?
Well, again, you know, gosh, it sounds like he'd be a prime candidate for working for local government, because we can't ask him that, not can we? Yeah, I don't know. Is it background checks? You know, in this surveillance state, and I'm going to say I'm at a loss, because in this surveillance state we've got now, you'd think with the NSA and everybody tracking things from your credit card purchases to your to your email,
right?
But they alerted to this guy. You know, they said, okay, you know, especially since he did the behavior while in the employ of the federal government. I mean, this guy, he's already signed off on you tracking him. So, yeah, I have no idea. And as far as the AR-15 goes, that's pretty reliable. I mean, it would be morbid, but I would basically, you know, I would make advanced bets that anytime anybody's ever shot.
Right.
That if the shot is, what are the odds that Dianne Feinstein is going to say the words AR-15?
Well, it's interesting, too. And our good friend Paul Hossie is in the chat room, and he's pointing out the fact that, you know, Alexis' security clearance was never revoked. How this guy was able to maintain a security clearance from 2004 on is beyond me. I mean, I know how tight it is. I had a top secret security clearance when I was in. And to get that top secret clearance, I mean, you almost have to sit, you know, at the right hand of God himself at that time. That is back in the 80s. But this guy never had his security clearance revoked, one. And it's real interesting, too, because one of the things that nobody seems to want to talk about is what would have happened if there would have been a soldier on that base that was armed. Because back in, I believe it was 1993, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was back in 1993, Bill Clinton is the one who said if you can't carry weapons on these military installations. If you're an MP, you can. But, you know, but regular average soldiers are not allowed to carry weapons. For me, it was a way of life. Let's go to the phones real quick. I believe this is Mayo. Is this Mayo?
Yeah, that it is, Ed.
All right, sir. What
on
can we
the
do for
security clearance thing from the shooting, the reason he was able to keep it, and the deal that happened in Seattle,
mm-hmm.
is like the police showed up, a report was taken, but the paperwork was never processed in the court, so he was never prosecuted. So, therefore, never
okay.
in the system.
Okay, well, thank you. I wasn't aware of that. I hadn't gotten that far yet. But it's really interesting, though, because we know the guy was being treated for mental issues. He was being treated by the Veterans Administration, the VA hospitals. So are they not required? Now, somebody explain this to me, too. If a VA hospital is treating someone with mental disorders and stuff, are they not required to report that? I would think
so. I believe so, but...
Exactly. So,
I'm kind of curious. What I've read, wasn't he a reservist?
Yes.
Like Navy,
yes,
Naval Reserve and was... Well,
he
then how
did he was on
PTSD.
Active duty most of the time. Huh?
Yeah. Where did he, I mean, how did he suffer PTSD? I mean,
well,
I can understand a Navy SEAL having PTSD or somebody being in battle, but not a reservist. No offense to any reservists out there.
Understand, as a reservist, he wasn't just playing weekend warrior. As a reservist, he was actually activated for most of his time in the Navy, just about all of it. All the reports say that he was a reservist, but he was activated real early, and he stayed on active duty most of that time. So PTSD would be pretty common. I mean, if he saw what happened in 9/11 or he was up there helping out clean it up, I can see that giving you PTSD. You know, he may – I don't know if he went to Iraq or anything else, but, you know, he was active for most of that time. So he wasn't your typical reservist. Well, I say not your typical reservist because today so many reservists are on active status for most of their reserve time. It's incredible. You know, back when I was in the 80s, we had a relative period of peace. You know, we had little things like Grenada and stuff like that. But, you know, we didn't have all these wars. Yeah, we didn't have all these wars going on constantly and all this other stuff. So, you know, that was a little bit different situation. What is really interesting here, though, is how quick everybody jumped on board. I mean, CNN immediately went out and started telling the whole world that this guy had an AR-15. He did all shooting. Piers Morgan last night. Ed Martin, you could chime in on this. Mayo, I'm going to put you back in the queue for a minute.
Sure.
You know, Martin, you can weigh in on this. But Piers Morgan, on his show last night, talking about how silent the NRA had been because the NRA doesn't want anybody to know that the Washington Navy Yard is heavily secured. It's crawling in armed security, people in arms and police, and it was still infiltrated by a man with a legally purchased AR-15 who just committed the same kind of atrocity as we saw at Sandy Hook and Aurora. I mean, this is the crap coming out of liberals' mouths. This idiot Piers Morgan, this guy never legally purchased anything. He tried to, but he was denied. Ed, what's going on here? I mean, why do they continue going down
the
road?
Well, I say, the people don't demand accountability from the media. That's the first big problem. And again, it cracks me up. The Piers Morgan, you know, talking about the pot calling the kettle black, he said, where's the NRA? Where's the NRA? You know, I'm going to sit here and say it was an AR-15, you know, shove my head completely up my ass and look like a fool. But you know, I'm just going to say this without having the police approach with, you know, and not even having crime scene footage or seeing the casings on the ground, I'm going to declare he had legally purchased an AR-15. And he wonders why the NRA is quiet. The NRA is quiet because right now they're waiting to see what the hell happened, you know, like intelligent people would do, you know, and come to find out, hey, maybe he didn't purchase an AR-15. Maybe he only, you know, and now there's stories coming out, maybe he only showed up with a shotgun, and any other guns he had, he took from people, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, okay, hey, Piers, to answer your little cockney, snotty-ass British attitude question, the reason the NRA is not saying anything is because there's no official statement as of yet from the law enforcement agencies.
Right.
Telling us exactly what happened or what led up to it. So, like you say, that's just simply not opening your mouth and inserting your foot, Piers. You know, should learn how to do it sometime. And that's exactly why the NRA is not doing it. Ooh, he makes himself look like an ass on so many levels.
Well, and that's exactly it. You know, and we had a question in the chat room. Wanted to know what his rank was. He was actually an E3, but he was demoted to an E2 back in 2008. For missing a day of duty because he was in jail based on a shooting I told you all about a minute ago. So, you know, but we've got the AP going on. They went out and said that he had three weapons. He had an AR-15 assault rifle, a shotgun. Of course, the LA Times did the same thing. You know, the International Herald Tribune actually added a bit here. You know, they said that he had an AR-15 assault rifle, which he did not. But they also went on to tell us that there were several ID cards found on him. So it took them a long time to figure out who he was. They had to fingerprint him and figure it out. You know, this is the kind of crap that goes on. This is what kills me about the news. And then you've got Dianne Feinstein and all these other people jumping up. When will enough be enough? We've got to do more to stop this endless loss of life. And my favorite was this. And I've got to tell you this. Well, I want to point this out first, because what a lot of people aren't really paying attention to here either. We know about Edward Snowden and all the other stuff. According to reports, Aaron Alexis was working on the base as an information technology contractor. Think about that for a minute. Did they need to shut him up? But, you know, Obama actually went out, and this is what kills me. And nobody's questioning Obama. But Obama goes out and promises to make sure that those responsible for the cowardly act are held accountable. This is a cowardly act, according to Obama. My question is this, Mr. President. If this is a cowardly act by a mentally deranged man, which all indications are that it is, you know, what is not a cowardly act about taking drones and attacking children, you know, in Pakistan or anywhere else around the world? You know, I think our president is the biggest coward we have in America, and he's hiding behind our daggone military to do it. So it's really crazy for me. You know, I was really assaulted by him doing that. But again, man, all these people are reporting this AR-15. The president's acting like, you know, this is some kind of a big deal. It's the seventh mass shooting since Obama has taken office. Quite honestly, Ed, I don't remember anybody in office has had that many shootings in that amount of time. Mass shootings during their time.
Well,
so then I'll
tell
you about.
You know, they tend to happen, but again, you know, we talk about the Newtown massacre, and that was done with a stolen assault rifles. This one apparently, you know, it was initiated with a perfectly legal shotgun, which of course, you know, Joe Biden recommends if you listen to him. You know, if you want to own defense, buy a shotgun, blow your head off. But yeah, so I, as with so many things, I'm going to wait and see what happens, what comes out in the story. I mean, right now, I say you got a bunch of talking heads out there with little or no information claiming there's AR-15s. You got Dan Feinstein inexplicably, again, making a fool out of herself, but she'll never be held accountable for it. So, you know, I'm going to wait and see. The guy may have had semi-automatic handguns. He may have had something else going for him. Or it's entirely possible that, you know, you see a lot of things about the militarized police force. And here's a different tangent to go off on. You know, we've got these police and the SWAT teams and the security guards or whatever. You know, we take a lot of these guys who are probably not trained well enough to handle themselves with such firepower. But, you know, you see the SWAT team going in for a marijuana bust with six AR-15s. So I'm wondering if at some point an AR-15 came into play, where did he get it? And then at that point, do we need to question whether we need to arm the police that heavily? Because apparently in some cases, they can get their guns taken away from them. And in other cases, like in New York, they can open fire and seemingly hit everybody but the person they're shooting at.
Oh, I know. Isn't that amazing? So, I mean, we've got a lot of things to look at here. And This is going to go crazy before it's over with. And there are also reports, and actually I've verified this myself, but, you know, all evidence of this guy's online persona, what little bit there was, has already been scrubbed. They started scrubbing all the information on him yesterday afternoon. Now, who started doing that? I don't know. At one time, he did have a LinkedIn profile. I'm on the LinkedIn.com network myself. It's a business tool. And, you know, he had a profile and everything else there, and it was gone by 5 o'clock yesterday when I went back to check it. So somebody's already scrubbing his online presence, too. I found that very interesting. In the meantime, we've got all these other things going on. We just found out that apparently, even though there has been no diplomatic ties between the U.S. and Iran since 1980, you know, everybody knows about the Tehran embassy and everything else and Jimmy Carter time and stuff like that. We cut off all diplomatic ties. But apparently we now have information that shows that Barack Obama has been directly communicating with Iran. You know, he actually went on TV Sunday, I believe it was 60 Minutes, and actually said that, yes, he had been exchanging letters with Iran. So I'm really puzzled by that. How are we not holding this guy accountable?
Well, to that effect, I don't understand not communicating with Iran. I don't understand not communicating with Cuba. So I would
not
say,
the point.
If the president is communicating with them, I don't think he should be doing, you know, as representing the United States, I don't think he should be doing it entirely on his own. I'm certainly hoping some Security Council people and stuff were, you know, apprised of him doing that. Probably doesn't necessarily mean
they weren't.
But absolutely. I mean, if he's off on a tangent doing it himself, yeah, there's a problem with that. But I'm one that sits there and thinks, you know what, like John F. Kennedy said, keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. In any situation like that, we've got somebody that's trying to become a nuclear power or pretty much every nuclear power. I think they should all be on a, you know, get at least one call or a friendly hi, hello, how are you letter once a month.
But, Ed, that's not the point. But that's not the point. The point is, to me, this is treasonous, and I'll tell you why. Because we cut off all ties between the U.S. and Iran in 1980. Okay, that's our official position. If he's going behind the scenes and using direct contact, he even sent a letter congratulating the president, President Rouhani, for winning the election in Iran. He sent him a letter congratulating him on that. Well, we're not supposed to be contacting Iran. That's our official position, and that's what we maintain. He is breaking every part of foreign policy that you could possibly think of. And by doing that, to me, that's treasonous. Now, if he wanted to say, okay, I'm going to open up the diplomatic channels, I'm going to deal with Iran directly and everything else, that's fine. But to be sending this guy, you know, congratulation letters and talking about what a good guy he is and all this other crap, this is ridiculous to me. This is treasonous behavior. This is something that should be done.
You can accomplish things like that with a very diplomatic public announcement. You know, we welcome the regime change. We, you know, hopefully we can thaw the icy relationship, something like that. But yeah, if he's just doing it on his own, no.
Sure.
No, he doesn't have the diplomatic creds, you know, not built up like people that are in the State Department for 20 years. He doesn't have the creds to go off. You're right. He's going out of line in his
Well, I'm just going to point this out because Paul Hossie, again, is asking a question in the chat room. And his question is, didn't Congress cut ties? And if Congress did cut ties, don't they have to reestablish the tie? The answer to that question is yes and yes. You know, so he is bypassing Congress once again, overstepping his authority. And to me, this is a treasonous act that any American would be put in jail for. You know, and here he's the president. He can just go behind our back and talk to anybody he wants to without any approval. You know, even though our Congress has said no, that is concerning to me. Mayo, go ahead.
I think I'd start to say
what else is new. He's been doing it since he's been in office, so it shouldn't be surprising. And since he won re-election, he doesn't have to worry about, you know, paying the piper or whatever, or trying to get re-elected again. So he's figuring, what the heck, go for it.
Well, there you go, Ed. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I was going to say, I agree that it wouldn't have been too much. I don't think it would have been too much trouble just to go through the proper channels, you know, with people with the right security clearance, just saying, hey, look, I'm going to send the new president a letter, you know, and hey, it's all good. If he publishes it, you know, look, just don't want anybody to be surprised here, that kind of thing. But it's just like trade. So, yeah, if officially diplomatic ties are cut off, then they are officially cut off, just the same as commerce is cut off. I mean, if he's not going to abide by diplomatic ties, then at what point does he do the bidding of somebody like, you know, an American company that maybe wants to sell some stuff in Iran and says, well, you know, hey, look, the diplomatic contact doesn't mean squat to me. I just do what I want to do. I'll hook you up.
It's very disturbing on a lot of levels.
These channels to be gone through.
Right. And it is very disturbing on a lot of levels because this isn't a letter. It clearly is letters, plural. So that means it's been an ongoing situation. We do want to move into Syria for a few minutes, Ed, before we go out of here. And I tell you why. The UN Inspector's Report came out, and it's very interesting. Obama and them are saying that this proves that the Syrian government are the ones who use chemical weapons. But when you read through this, guess what, folks? That's a lie. And I tell you why. Because a UN inspector's report said that, yes, there were rockets loaded with sarin that had been used close to one of the Syrian military bases. However, they also said that this evidence could have been manipulated by the surrounding neighborhoods from rebels. You bet your butt. And they also went on to say that there have been many people in that area that weren't the Syrian government. So it's really interesting, and they also point out that, you know, U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power points out that these weapons were professionally made. Now, as we went on through the last couple of weeks, we pointed out some serious issues here, because for one thing, the rebels in Damascus admitted that they were the ones who shot the chemical weapon off last month. So we know that they used them. They admitted that to an AP reporter. Now, you know, I'm not much in mainstream media. I'm always telling people that, and I agree with that. But if you're going to listen to mainstream media, explain why mainstream media decided to ignore this story. AP journalist Dale Gavlak said that the Syrian rebels in the Damascus suburb of Ghouta admitted that they were the ones who had shot off the chemical weapons. But they also told them that they got these weapons because these weapons were supposed to go to Al-Qaeda, Jabhat al-Nusra, which we've talked about extensively here. And it's interesting as well because they said that these were provided to them by the Saudis. So who controls the Saudis, Ed, or who do the Saudis control? And they're giving these weapons.
Saudis have enough oil. They control. I think they control who they want to control, and they work with who they want to work with. But I mean, to me, this gets back to what. And again, just like the shooting and stuff, you know, I know sometimes I probably do it to the point of people rolling their eyes, but it's like, you know, wait and see, wait and see. It's like with Syrian news, yeah, and the Falun Gong, people use that in the subway in Japan, too, you know. It can be made
right.
by people other than governments. But, you know, I'm going to gloat a little. I said, hey, you know, I don't doubt that Syrian was used. I don't doubt that they were killed. But also, you know, not that the government's going to give me the information, but you know, until it's proven who used it, there is to be no reaction to the action because we don't know who initiated the action. So that's where I've been all along. So I think I read some of the stories on the UN report, and to me, I just actually had a few friends post them on Facebook. Like, duh, it's like, yeah, somebody staring. We don't know who. So I think if the U.S. government and Biden and Kerry and everybody are so damn sure it was the Syrians and they've seen the date, why didn't they hand that over to the U.N.? Because, you know, whatever, they're apparently able to make a judgment call a whole lot better than the U.N. You know, they're able to make a judgment call days after the fact, whereas the U.N. can't make the judgment call weeks and weeks after the fact, you know, after even doing more homework on it. So... either our government is just packed full of geniuses with top secret information that they don't share with even the UN, or they are just, they were blowing smoke up our ass and trying to convince us that, yeah, Assad is going to kill a whole lot more people with nerve gas, just like he killed these people. But trust us, you know, we know he killed these people, and now apparently nobody really knows if he did it or not.
Oh, it's fascinating It's fascinating because the only people that were killed here, and hat tip to Paul Hossie, but the only people that were killed from these attacks were civilians and Syrian troops. There were no rebels killed in any of this. So why would the Syrian troops kill themselves and commit a mass suicide like that? I have no idea. There was nothing to gain there. You know, and it's also interesting, just to give some clarification of this, according to the UN report, just on the rocket samples that they were able to examine. Now, remember, they were shot at and left a little bit earlier. But just out of the rocket samples that they were able to examine, they had a payload that totaled about 350 liters. To give you some idea of how much sarin gas that is, that's 35 times the amount that was used in the Tokyo subway attack in 1995. And the inspectors also confirmed that the sarin was superior to that was used in Tokyo, and it was also superior, this is very important here, it was also superior to what was used by Iraq against Iran back in the 80s. But if you remember, you know, we went after Saddam Hussein, and we accused him of using chemical weapons against Iran. The chemical weapons, the sarin gas they used, was not of this quality. So that is very, very disturbing, too. Let's take a quick phone call real quick, Ed. This is a 361 number. You're on the air.
Hey, this is a 361 number. Hey, that's
Hossie. Well, by God, this is Paul Hossie, folks. You're in for a real treat. How you doing, sir?
All right, my friend. All right. Listen, I just did, in fact, a pretty detailed research and article on this attack in Syria. And the Russians came out. First off, the Russians had sold the mustard gas and the sarin to the Syrians. And they... came out and said simply that this is not ours at all. The compound mixture was incorrect, and they said that this was most likely a homemade variety. Now, mm-hmm. Turkey, which is Syria's biggest enemy in the region, has been chomping for a fight, and they also went in and researched what they could find on the attack. And they very reluctantly concurred with the Russians that this is not weapons-grade stuff. And then you have to bear in mind the area that was hit, had previously been held by the rebels, was pushed out by the Syrian troops. Most of the population there were pro-Assad individuals. The only people that were reported killed was... the civilians, and approximately 100 of the government troops. there was no reported deaths of rebels or rebel leaders in this area. So the question is, I have to go back, and this is one of the things I found really fascinating, was at the beginning of all this, Obama said that if Assad used the gas, then there would be repercussions. But he never makes mention what happens if the rebels use the gas. It was assumed
from
the get-go.
But that's an important distinction, though, and I think both of you guys would agree with that, because, you know, Barack Obama has clearly sided with the Brotherhood and everything. I don't understand that. The Muslim Brotherhood basically makes up Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda brought the Twin Towers. This is something I just dropped off there to bash the president. He has went on record stating that he is going to supply armed Syrian rebels. And we know that the Syrian rebels. So with all that in mind,
it is fascinating because most of these rebels do have Al-Qaeda connections. And to make the assumption that it would only be Assad that would use the chemical weapons almost sounds like it was a slip of the tongue. It was pre-planned that we would have to go in and intervene on behalf of the rebels. Now, the problem you run into is because this war is basically a stalemate. So if you go in and do that, even a limited so-called narrow assault, you could destabilize the Assad government enough to cause it to fall. And then the end result is you have another pro-Islamic regime in the Middle East. And this one is even closer to Israel. Then you have the Iranian-backed Hezbollah sitting there in the southern Lebanon, plus these Iranian other groups sitting there in the Gaza Strip. Yeah, Israel is talk about being between a rock and a hard place.
Well, see, that's another thing too, because at the end of the day. You know, it would appear that we are taking marching orders from two different bosses, and neither one of which is Obama. And let's take Valerie Jarrett out of the mix for a minute. But, I mean, it ultimately appears in the Middle East that we are the Israeli police force in the Middle East. That's the bottom line there, and I don't care if anybody likes it or not. That is exactly what we've come to over the last decade or so, maybe the last 2 decades. And then we have to look, you know, at this whole world police mantra. You know, the other side of the equation is we're now arming, you know, the Syrian rebels and everything else, knowing that Al-Qaeda, we did the same thing with Osama bin Laden. We did the same thing with Saddam Hussein. Hell, we did the same thing with Fidel Castro. We continue to build these enemies that ultimately we end up fighting against, and nobody wants to pay attention to that. You know, and we've got some disturbing things coming out of Syria. Mother Agnes. She's a Catholic nun. She's been living in Syria for 20 years. She has been actively reporting on what's really going on there. She looked at the videos and everything else about these so-called victims. And I say so-called because Mother Agnes says these are alleged victims. You know, she questions the entire authenticity, and she points out some obvious things. For one thing, she doubts that all this footage could have been done in just a couple of minutes. She doubts that, you know, what's really happened because there's no parents of these dead kids anywhere. And she's also pissed at the world media, including the U.S. liberal media, because they keep turning a blind eye to the massacres by the rebel extremists. In her particular town, rebel extremists have left 500 civilians dead that include women and children. These are the rebels doing this. This is the U.S.-backed rebels killing unarmed civilian women and children. And nobody wants to pay attention.
And, Ed, you might want to add to that the fact that they are also going heavily after Christian populations.
Yes, that we've actually got reports, YouTube videos and everything else, that if you don't convert to Islam right on the spot, they just shoot you in the back of the head. Mr. Martin, go ahead. I'm going to leave your mic open, Paul. Go ahead, Martin.
Well, you know, like I said, it's still a wait and see. I mean, obviously, I don't want to say I agree with the UN, but that's what it's been all along. We don't know who did it. It's been done before. The reports, and the disturbing thing to me is just these reports that sort of conflict with the U.S. reports, you know, the certainty that we had. They've been out there from, you know, pretty much from day one, whether maybe you didn't want to hear it from the Russians, maybe you didn't want to hear it from Assad or his, or any of his staffers, but they've been out there. And yeah, here we are weeks and weeks and weeks later, and, you know, we're at the same place. And I just question, you know, I hate to have to question my own government, but I'm sitting here thinking to myself, if after the fact and a much more thorough investigation, the UN still can't come to a conclusion, then I'm starting to question, you know, what the hell is our own government up to? And, you know, sort of want to sit back and say, my God, are they trying to start a war for no good reason? Do they want to kill people for no, you know, for some geopolitical blood?
Well, the answer to all those questions.
How sociopathic have we gotten here?
Oh, I don't even think this is oil anymore, Paul. I mean, this
really?
Isn't oil. I don't think it's oil anymore. I mean, I think there was an argument to be made for that in the beginning. But understand this. Every bomb that we drop costs millions of dollars. You know, one of the largest industries in the United States is the Defense Department budget is one of the biggest budgets we've got. And those defense contractors are making a killing. And I don't use that term lightly. Literally. I don't use that term lightly. They're making a killing replacing this stuff. So I'm not sure it's all about oil anymore. It is all about money. But I'm not sure it's all about oil. And what's really interesting is we continue the U.S. liberal media, and I say liberal media, and I'll include Fox News in that because Fox News likes to pick and choose what they want to put out there too. They're no different than anybody else. But mainstream media continues ignoring it because we have got so many reports, eyewitness accounts, video and everything else of rebels going into these Christian villages and towns around Damascus.
Yeah.
And killing people left and right. And they're all led by the Al-Nusra Front, which is a known Al-Qaeda. They're on our terrorist watch list. They are a known Al-Qaeda Muslim Brotherhood organization, and we are funding them. How in the hell can anybody sleep at night knowing that we're funding the same guys that supposedly, and I say supposedly because I don't believe, well, we're not going to get into the 9-1-1 theories tonight, but if these guys supposedly brought down the Twin Towers and killed 3,000 Americans, where is the outrage? Why are we funding them? It's disturbing to me. And to give you some idea, we're going to stay in overdrive for a few minutes. So if you guys need to go, please feel free to. I apologize. I want to stay in overdrive for a couple of minutes here. But
I got to run for a second.
Okay, buddy. All right. But, you know, when we look at this, you know, let's look at some recent polls. Here's a poll that was done over the weekend. You can actually find this on Huffington Post, folks. Mayo, I'm going to open your line back up. I'm not sure if it's still there or not. You know, okay. But when we look at this, let's look at the polls. Huffington Post, a liberal media outlet. So we're not even looking at a conservative-led push here. But the Huffington Post, YouGov, put out a poll over the weekend. And according to their responses, 62% to 13% say that the United States should not use airstrikes in Syria, period. Now, if you break that down, and they ask the question, you know, do we go ahead and do airstrikes if Syria does not give up its chemical weapons, 50% to 37% say we still don't do airstrikes. That tells you how sick America is of this stuff, and yet these clowns are continuing to go down this road. What gives?
Well, if you look at it, I mean, we have, well, I say we, the American population has been consistent in saying no more strikes. Obama has been persistent in saying, but we have to. You know, we have this moral prerogative. He sent, you know, Kerry out there. He sent Biden out there. He sent, I think even Hillary got involved at one point.
But don't forget, he also sent McCain and Lindsey Graham. Those are his two lapdogs to get in the middle of this, too. Go ahead.
Yep. You're right. You're absolutely right. For some reason, there is this imperative that we have to strike Assad. We have to destabilize Assad. Now, the question is why? What? I mean, I've always, you know, gone by the idea you follow the money, and in this case, you've got to ask yourself who benefits by destabilizing a fairly pro-Western, granted a dictator, but in the Middle East, that's, you know, that's par for the course. But, you know, but who benefits from this? I mean, Assad is an ally of Russia, but He's also very supportive of women, women's rights. He has protected the few Jews that live in Syria. He's protected the Christian minority. What gives here? I mean, who's going to benefit by taking Assad out of the picture?
Well, let's look at a bigger picture here, too, because one of the things when we talk about this survey, I think it's important to check out these demographics as well, because the Republicans are always accused of being the warmongers, right? They want to go to war with everybody so that they get rich, 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 right? Interestingly enough, the Democrats in the poll, according to a 43-24% margin of Democrats, said that the threat of airstrikes will aid diplomatic efforts. And they've got no problem basically bombing Syria. However, when you flip the coin to take the Democrats out of the mix, the independents on a 40-23% ratio and Republicans on a 51-30% majority said that these threat of airstrikes are counterproductive. So you've got independents and Republicans actually siding together saying that we don't need to do airstrikes. It's counterproductive to the peace process. These so-called warmongers, all right, are saying we don't need more war, and the Democrats who are accusing the Republicans of being the warmongers are saying, yeah, let's do it. You know, these things are very interesting. These things are very interesting. And I've got something I want to point out to you, Paul, because I think you're really going to like this. You know, I'm also reading something from the Freedom Outpost today. You guys can go to freedomoutpost.com, and they basically have some stuff in there from a Russian newspaper, but it's very, very interesting. I'm going to link in the chat room real quick, but it's very, very interesting to read, and I think you've already read that, Paul. I think I sent that to you earlier today, or I actually posted on Facebook. But you've got some words from Xavier Lerma. He's in Russia,
and
if you look at these quotes, it's very, very interesting. But the one that stands out to me most at this time, and it's only because you mentioned oil, Paul. Here's the thing: the Saudi king, all right. And this is according to Xavier Lerma. The Saudi king, whom Obama bowed to and Bush kissed, is demanding that Obama attack Syria. And I really have no problem believing that. Why is that? Because Russia is the largest country and the number one oil and gas producer in the world today, folks. Get that in your heads. Russia is number one oil and gas producer. So that's a threat to the Saudis for their way of life, because that's the only thing they've ever had for power was giving up all the oil. So now, because Russia is outproducing them, now they've got competition. It's the first time the Saudis have really ever had any competition. You know, so the only way they can sustain their way of life, these Saudi dictators and everything else, because it's not the people that are being helped right here, it's the daggone leadership. The only way these sheikhs can maintain their way of life is to get control of the Middle East. And they're using the United States as their world police to do so. Is that too far of a stretch?
No, I don't think it's too far of a stretch at all. You're absolutely correct. The Russia, thanks to global warming or whatever you want to call it, a lot of Siberia was previously on you couldn't get in there and drill. Now the permafrost is gone, and you can drill. And Russia is setting on a gold mine, quite literally, of natural gas, oil, and a ton of precious metals. In fact, there is a pipeline that is still being worked on where they can supply Western Europe with all the gas and oil need that they will ever have. And you look at the countries that are dependent, you know, these one resource countries, Kuwait and everything else. And suddenly now they're going to be deprived of having to provide oil to Europe, Western Europe. They're going to be deprived of, I mean, one of their number one clients has been Japan. Not anymore. The Russians can supply it. They're hurting. And so we're going to be basically their number one client here. Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Qatar and the rest of them, the United Arab Emirates. We're going to be that. So yes, we have to basically be their policemen, if you will. But I still don't understand why we want to support groups tied with Al-Qaeda. I mean, people who want our head on a plate, literally.
Well, it's the same thing as always, though, Paul. If you look through history, You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, if you will. And we look at this, and we look at Fidel Castro, we look at Saddam Hussein, we look at Osama bin Laden, we look at all these people around the world who have caused all this chaos and all this other stuff. You know, we at one point needed to use them, so we're making deals with the devil, and that's exactly what we're doing with Al-Qaeda. You know, in this particular case, though, Al-Qaeda brought terrorism to our shores at a level we have never seen or experienced before. And, you know, the American people are not jumping up, you know. They are willing to give up, you know, anything for security, and they don't have a squat. It's interesting because, you know, as Xavier goes on to say, you know, one of the terms I've always used since Obama took office, and it's interesting that this showed up in the Russian thing, but, you know, he goes on to say, as they say in America, Obama is Bush on steroids. I've been saying he's Bush on steroids since practically he was inaugurated, so it's good to see they read my stuff. And actually, that's not far-fetched because every week we do an analysis on all the IP addresses and everything else that come here so we can find out who's following us. And I actually have people following us in Russia, so maybe they're one of them. I don't know for sure, but they do follow us in Russia.
Yeah, actually, they're, I think my number two reader profile is from Russia and the Ukraine. So,
actually, in my top five, the office of the White House president is in my top five, so I think it's funny, too. But what's interesting is he goes on to say that with just these words, the United States looks like a third-world nation rather than a leading nation, but this is just what the Marxist Obama wanted. Because Obama has claimed, and he's absolutely right about this, Obama has claimed to being a staunch Marxist. When he sat at below the huge painting of Karl Marx, he studied Karl Marx. You know, he has proclaimed before in his past that he is a Marxist. He said this all the time when he was at Occidental College, assuming he went to Occidental College because nobody can prove anything he's been at. You know, so all of this, I mean, Obama has proven this history of portraying himself and proclaiming to be a Marxist until he became president of the United States. And clearly, I agree with the statement that the U.S. right now looks like a third-world nation rather than a leading nation, and it's because of his failures. I know people think we're picking on the president here, but we're not. I mean, you know, we need a strong leader, and he's not one.
I'll just interject. I mean, what kills me, and I can't remember the name of the gentleman's show. It's on Sunday nights late. I listened to, but he made the statement of Bush was given heck for 7 minutes, you know, taking 7 minutes to answer to 911, and 7 hours after Benghazi happened, you know, nobody's taking Obama to task for not answering, you know, or Hillary Clinton or anyone else involved. You know,
well, that happened. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that happened because he was sending weapons. And, you know, the whole situation in Benghazi was over illegal weapons movement, folks. I'm just telling you that right now. You can believe what you want. And once everybody found out about that, that was just covering your ass. If you notice, we already have reports out just, I think it was last week, that the weapons have mysteriously disappeared, that they were stolen and moved. Those weapons, of course, went on to Syria to aid the rebels. So, you know, we've got all this going on. And it's really interesting, too, because Xavier goes on to say that Russia has already slain its red dragon, or communism, if you will. But now they're facing Puff the Magic Dragon, because all Obama is doing is blowing smoke in people's eyes and bombing people into thinking that's democracy. You know, that is a pretty bold statement, you know, but it's fairly true. I can't really argue with it.
Yeah, I mean, what was his big statement when he was running? There will be no preemptive strikes. There will be no this. I mean, with what he was calling for, without Congress's approval, would have been a preemptive strike, wouldn't it? So, you know, just
Congress,
I said, Bush on steroids.
Right, and Congress is nothing more than an impediment to Obama. He doesn't feel like he has to answer to any of them, and that's why he's got Valerie Jarrett Payne, the Muslim Brotherhood, allowing these guys into the White House. You know, you can go on and on and on. Eric Holder, I mean, we can go through a whole list. You know, and it's part of the Democratic Party makeup at that national level. I mean, let's not forget Hillary Clinton here, who they're trying to prop up to be the candidate in 2016, you know, and her close ties to Huma Abedin. Everybody that's not familiar with that name, it's Anthony Weiner's wife. Everybody knows who Anthony Weiner is, you know, but Huma Abedin is tied to the Muslim Brotherhood. Her whole family is Muslim Brotherhood, and she actually worked for a family paper putting out all the Muslim Brotherhood trash. So, you know, and she is Hillary Clinton's right-hand person until recently because Anthony Weiner became too much baggage, so they had to put her on the back burner a little bit. But, yeah, there's so many things going on around the world, guys. It's just crazy. But I tell you, I'm out of time here. Thank you both for calling in. I really appreciate it. I really do, Paul, Mayo. Stay in touch, gentlemen. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
All
right. For you folks, I got to tell you this. You know, it is far past the time that we as Americans stand together and take back this government. A lot of people talk about it. Take back Kentucky. Take back this. Take back the government. What do you mean take back? We don't have anything to take back. Yes, you do. You need to take freedom back. You need to take democracy back. We need to tell our government. We need to actually, truthfully, we need to root for Rand Paul, who appears to be the only one left with any common sense that believes in the Constitution, much like his father before him. We need to quit listening to the mainstream lies. George Bush said that Iraq had chemical weapons. Nobody believed him. Now, all of a sudden, Syria is being accused of these chemical weapons. Bush said that they moved the weapons to Syria. I didn't like George Bush. I didn't like him at all. No more than I like Barack Obama. No more than I like Bill Clinton. But the point of the matter is, this isn't Republican or Democrat. This is a systemic way of destroying the American life. This is what we have to fight for each and every day. We can't fight it by sitting on our butts. You need to get involved. We found out that Syria wasn't going to be bombed because the American people got on the phones and told their congressman, yeah, you go ahead. Go ahead and bomb them. Guess what? You'll be out of a job tomorrow. And it scares them because that's the only thing they worry about is ceding their power or their perceived authority. They do not want to give that up. So you make a difference by getting involved. If that's the best you can do is write an email, write a letter, call your congressman on a daily basis, and tell them what you think about something. If that's the best you can possibly do, then do it. Then do it. There's no excuses not to. Now, there's people like us out there who are going to bring you the truth because that's what we do. We're no longer going to live in this denial and everything else. We're going to bring you the truth. Sometimes it hurts. The truth can be painful. But it's our life. It's our America. It is what we make of it. If you are happy, if you are proud of the way that the world perceives America today, then continue following this mindless mind game and this dumbing down of your intelligence and your ego. Go ahead. Let them win. But 10 years from now, when you wake up and you don't have anywhere to go, then you've got to think about, how did I get here? When you can't get in your car and go to the store because gas is 10 bucks a gallon, when you can't buy a loaf of bread to feed your starving kids because the costs are so outrageous you can't afford it, because the government is now broke and can't afford to give you food stamps 10 years from now, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? When we have enemies coming onto our shore that's going to make the World Trade Center look like a daggone drop in the bucket because of the terrorist attacks that we're opening the door to, what are you going to do? We have been infiltrated in this country, folks. These cells are here. I don't think there's any doubt about that anymore. So what are you going to do? Get involved. Pay attention. Take back your America. Let freedom ring. That's all I've got. Tomorrow night I'll be here with Dale the Truth. You're in for a treat because Dale is always wound up. Don't forget Thursday night at 7 o'clock with Dale the Truth right here on the TNT Thursday Night Truth Show. And our good friend Ken Moman on Sunday nights at 7 with the Liberty Unbridled Show. In the meantime, folks, have a great night. We'll talk to you then. Take care.